Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hutton O'Clock. Noon on a Wednesday. That means it is Hutton O'Clock. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow is with us. Hutton, our favorite time of the week. Appreciate you for stopping by. Want to get into some Titans talk and your thoughts on the coaching search. But before we get into that first, the NCAA is investigating Tennessee for potential NIL violations. Just your initial thoughts on that, what we've seen come from it, Dondi Plowman's response, and what do you think will come of all of this, not just for Tennessee, but for college football as a whole?
Yeah, so my initial response anytime, Caroline, great to be on with you guys. Willie D. May, same, is I don't know what power the NCAA currently has. I mean, if you bow up, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. The face of college football right now with the trophy are the Michigan Wolverines, right?
Correct.
Yep.
They stood at the podium afterwards and Jim Harbaugh claimed innocence. I mean, they allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, so
there was nothing they could do about it.
Chat, exactly. And I don't know if there's anything to do about this because I don't know what power the NCAA currently has. Chad and I were discussing this yesterday on Hot Mic, and I just, because we were trying to figure out like why, if you're going, why you go after the program that was 100% helpful with the previous investigation. The NCAA said that, by the way. Not anyone wearing the orange hat said that. Right. The NCAA admitted that. And I said, but it's, if I'm just trying to be the 30,000 foot view of this, the NCAA, would in that situation had the perceived power because Tennessee fully cooperated. Michigan didn't at first. They did not with Harbaugh and company over the quote unquote hamburger, which was more than that. And they still end up winning the title, and it doesn't really matter in the end because they are the champions regardless of what happens in the future. They won the national title. And we even heard from Baker who said, oh, yeah, I mean, they won it fair and square. Again, I'll just go back to that example, and I think to myself, well, Tennessee fully cooperated, and they had the perceived power, and they're trying to do it again, but I don't know why they pick and choose where they do this. And I'm not ultimately sure what comes of this based on that, because you have the states involved, you have all the collectives, and the fact that in 2021, they stood back. They bowed down and they said, hey, we can't do this. We've got too much going on in the court system. It's up to the individual program, up to the individual conferences that you're a part of to regulate whatever you're going to do and come up with the guidelines. By doing that, I don't know how they retroactively turn around and do anything regarding how this system currently plays out. And it's a system that needs regulation. But unfortunately, the NCAA has already admitted they're incapable of regulating anything.
Right. That I think that we all would agree that standardization would be great. Regulation would be great. But what can the NCAA do? So, Hutton, how long do you think it is before we look at the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, maybe the Big 12, who knows? These conferences potentially joining forces and breaking away from the NCAA.
Well, I think it's sooner rather than later, Caroline. And you guys can disagree, but I mean, the collectives are already banding together as one group. You've seen the different facets of how things funnel through on three and the different branches of this entire, the entire monster that has been allowed to just take off. And I also say this, the rights to the college football playoff are coming up in 2 years after we began the 12 team playoff. And based on all the money from the networks that's being devoted, the billions that's being devoted to the NFL, I think the next big wave of money is coming from the streaming services, Amazon, Netflix, and more. And whenever that money comes in, that wave of cash, I think that's whenever we see a big shift in the haves and the have-nots. We've already seen it, but I mean like a truly major shift. And I won't be shocked if we see a NCAA football players association. because I think that's ultimately where we're headed for the piece of the pie, which is why the NCAA is ultimately looking into all of this. They're trying to have the power so that they keep the power with the money that's involved in the big business of college football and college athletics.
What do you think we could ever have a system? You got me thinking when you said the collectives are starting to sort of mobilize and get together.
Yeah, they allowed the Grove Collective from Ole Miss to represent all of them on Capitol Hill, for instance.
Okay. Do you think we could ever get, I don't know if I would say the union, it's some sort of unionization of all of the collectives, like you certified to be in the game, and there can be some transparency of, okay, here's how we do this, here's how you can find out what your value is as an NIL person. A school can have an idea of what it's going to take, sort of create a market where everybody kind of knows what's going on, rather than a lot of the spy games and obvious stuff going on with tampering and on both sides, right? Manipulating the system.
Well, the collectives, speaking just through the Grove Collective on Capitol Hill, they admitted there that they were open to regulation. Now, they don't necessarily agree with the regulation that's being proposed by Senator Tommy Tuberville on behalf of what Charlie Baker and others are pitching through the NCAA. But it's not like they want the state-by-state situation that they have, because some collectives are handcuffed based on certain rules or laws compared to others.
And it's based on state law, right?
State law, right.
The differing state laws, yeah.
No doubt. And so if you're comparing all that, they would like some regulation with that. I don't think that's asking too much. And again, I don't think that they are against they don't want the wide open wild, wild west. What they don't want is the to be reined in to a point where the collectives are just discontinued and everything funnels to the university, which is the NCAA. And, you know, the other part of this, Willie, and it's a segue, but it's a part of all of this, is the money allocated through the NCAA and through the athletic departments for coaches and administrators or staff members who are no longer a part of the university that are still getting paid. The average athletic budget in the Power Five right now, 9% of that goes to the athlete. And 42 to 44.5% of the average athletic budget is going towards buyouts based on fired staff members, administrators, coaches. It's insane.
That's not a good
part system. That's broken is you are paid to fail in college football if you're a coach, just point blank. And you don't have to really accomplish all that much to get a raise. Raise season exists because of all of the buyout money that is across college football. And they're crying poor, which is also laughable. And I'm not trying to advocate solely on behalf of the student athlete, quote unquote, but I am looking around going, man, I mean, if you think about what Jimbo Fisher is getting, it is kind of funny to look at like all the jokes that were made about Texas A&M and buying all these players when they're literally paying Jimbo Fisher not to be a part of it. And they're not even referencing that. And that's just the big example, but it's across the board. And what coaches are getting paid and what they're not getting paid.
I know the government is getting involved to some degree in this. I just wonder, can they help figure this out, or are we better off not even having them involved? I don't know. Like with these lawsuits, well, and senators involved, is that really going to get us where we need to go?
I think that's the only opportunity for some joint decision that everyone can possibly agree on is some federal legislation. Chad and I have talked with Coach Tuberville. He still wants us to call him Coach multiple times. And each time, I mean, it's a headache. I mean, he's trying to have a bipartisan a bill passed, and it's just difficult. It takes time. I mean, it's the government involved, you know, it's the minutia of everything and every word and how it's phrased and who's getting what piece of the pie. And I think it's important that they actually have different voices in that bill, where for the first time, collective, the last time that they were heard was 2 months ago, I believe. They were on Capitol Hill. That was the 10th or 11th time they were on Capitol Hill for a hearing. And that was the first time that a collective had been in front of them being questioned. That's also, by the way, the first time that the NCAA president had been present for a hearing. So it's ludicrous. It's crazy. It's dumb. And at the same time, it's needed. But it's a process that takes way too much time because, for whatever reason, lawmakers like to meet for the sake of meeting instead of meeting for the sake of doing.
Yeah, I think everybody in corporate America could probably relate to that. But you would at least hope that the powers that be were being a little bit more productive in those meetings.
Well, and the state lawmakers, by the way, it actually benefits them to get something done quickly.
Yeah.
Because if you do, that's the law, you're going about it, and you're improving the tax dollars and everything else through your state. So, you know, you've got all the states coming together and trying to determine what's going to happen in college football. There are a lot of different factors involved in all this. And some people, you know, it's a great example of how many conferences didn't trust the SEC and the ESPN. Whenever the first time we heard about expansion to 12, no one really wanted to just let Greg Sankey be the voice of it because they didn't trust him or ESPN based on the fact that Texas and Oklahoma were bouncing to the SEC, and all the money was headed to the SEC whenever ESPN got the rights instead of CBS. To me, it's the same thing. If you're looking at what Texas wants, what Alabama, the state of Alabama or Georgia, what they want compared to, you know, what we may see in the state of Kentucky, which is, you know, a basketball state. I think it's way different, and you want different things involved in that bill.
Jonathan Hutton is with us, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, looking at the Titans defensive coordinator search, so far the only name that I have seen, and if I've missed some things, somebody please correct me, but the only name that we have seen arise is Denard Wilson, the secondary coach with the Ravens. What do you make of that interview, the fact that that's the only name that we've seen come up so far, and the fact that he has not been a defensive coordinator so far in his career?
I'm kind of surprised by that last aspect because I think it is a crucial hire from this regard. I'm not worried about Callahan wanting to come in and call plays specifically. Mm-hmm. I think it is extremely difficult to be a first-time head coach, call your offensive plays, manage the NFL game during the game, challenge plays, and just know quick situations, game situations, what's going to happen, while also trying to have the opposing defensive coordinator chase plays two or three plays in advance. You're setting defenses up for what you're doing. He's going to have a great eye in the sky for him, his offensive coordinator. And number two, he's going to have a head coach of defense. Where you don't also want to, everything I just listed, also have to say, why is the communication lacking on the defensive side today? Why did the game plan not work? What are we doing to adjust? How are we fixing this? Who's coming in at what time? We're getting beat up on the defensive front. We're going to make a switch to this. There's a lot of head coaching decisions that go on. And when you have the veteran defensive coordinator, I think it just helps you in that regard. It's a crucial hire from that specific stance because normally your first staff isn't the staff that leads to coaching longevity. You make adjustments after year one when you figure out certain fits or certain guys who didn't necessarily live up to whatever expectation you had bringing them in, or someone else becomes available, and then you adjust your staff accordingly. This is one that he's got to hit on. And it can be a younger coach. It can be a version of Brian Callahan for the defensive side. But I just assume that it would be more of a veteran of the defensive game than someone who hasn't called plays before specifically. I don't know if you guys agree, but I also would expect that down in Mobile, there's a lot of the discussions going on about that spot.
I asked this in general this week. This is my question of the week. When you have a brand new coach who is a first-time head coach and you've got a very young first-time general manager only in his second year, and you have a team that's in a serious transition with its roster, you start to list, okay, who are my best assets right now? It's a pretty thin list, right? And I looked at the odds makers the Titans are, let's just call it 100-1, right? If the Carolina Panthers are the biggest long shot next year at 150-1, I'm just going by Jimmy Shapiro and his latest, whatever he works for now. I get these emails from him. 150-1.
He works for whoever he wants to. Jimmy's the man.
Yeah. So the Titans are in that next group of long shots at 100-1. How would you message it from the top in terms of your messaging to your fans, to the media, your PR? Is it okay to say we're in a rebuild? Or do you have to sell hope and maybe, you know, to a degree, put them in a tough spot, set expectations when really the bar should be pretty low to start with?
I don't know if you use the word specifically, Willie, but just because of optics and the perception of whatever they're about to announce with the new stadium. Here's the deal. Common sense tells you that's what they're doing. And I think the perception, the optics, you can send that message this way. Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill are no longer on part of the Tennessee Titans. Like that in and of it, and Kevin Byard's gone. I mean, that in and of itself sends that message with a younger team, with a young coach and a young general manager. And I also look at the Houston Texans, a 3-win team that turned around and won the division. And I don't get the sense that they want to use the word, even though they're going to use the word internally. And I think most fans would understand that. But I also get just being blunt about what you're doing. The Predators did this, right?
And then I'm thinking about how they did it. They didn't say we're tanking, and they're not tanking. But they reset the bar and kind of said, give me some time here. We're looking at the big picture here. We're not exactly sure what's going to happen this year. I think there's a way to do it to where you still have hope, right? You're not saying turn off the TV, don't watch our team. But you're saying here are some young, exciting guys. We got a young coach, and we're trying to build around that. It may take some time. Yep. It's got to be realistic here.
I'm all about being the version of the organization that wants to be point blank and honest, right? I think they're turning a page on less grouch and more blunt honesty, maybe, and the development. I think you can do it. You set yourself up though if you're not showing progress, because you have to show progress in year one of this. You do. You have to show.
But what's progress? Going from 6 wins to 8 wins? I mean, that's a scary thing. They won 6 games, and there's a chance they might have to go backwards to go the 2 steps or 3 steps forward.
Well, I think it's more about developing the talent. You know, how many times did we sit on the show here and discuss how are they actually improving their roster on practices during the week, right? And we see the development. We see the chemistry grow instead of take a step back or just stay in neutral. I think that's more imperative than the wins and losses. If you're going to actually just be point blank, hey, we're rebuilding and here's how we're going about it. I think they've already kind of told us that, and they should have done this last offseason but chose not to. I'm all for the way Henry went out in the regular season. I thought it was a great send-off. But again, like they were 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And we could discuss and tell and see how they were 1 foot in, 1 foot out. I think you can see where they're both feet into the rebuild process now, and they've set themselves up with all the money allocated and the high draft pick to actually go out and begin that process and show the progression that I'm talking about. They have to be in December of this year, headed towards a spot where they feel like they're really taking a big step forward in 2025, because you can't use the word and then just fall flat on your face and end up with what they did when they traded the number one overall pick and Jared Goff was drafted. I think it's important that they're more of a version of, or a better version of who they are right now, even though they're a ways away roster wise from being where they need to be to compete. And hey, with the money that they have, they're allowed to go out and prove everyone wrong and show that they're really good at talent evaluation and acquisition. That's the other thing too. I wouldn't use it yet until we see what they've done.
Yeah, let's see how smart they are with that money. It doesn't mean you have to spend every dime of it too. You have to spend it smart.
That's true.
Okay,
that's
so true. Along those lines, what percentage chance do you think Derrick Henry has of coming back? I say it's less than 5%. That's what I thought.
I was going to say less than 10, but I'm more along the lines with you. I mean,
Caroline's a little different. Caroline's a little higher.
Well, let me.
I don't. I'm going to
pull
up. I'm not
going
to say that he's coming back.
No, no. I'm just saying percentage chance.
I don't know if I'm more along the lines of Willie,
but what would you say, Caroline?
I don't know if I could put a percentage chance, but my thing was Brian Callahan just didn't close the door on it. He didn't say, yes, absolutely, we're bringing him back, or the way that he sounded didn't sound like, oh, no, there's no way we're going in that direction. He just kept the door open. I think comes down to business.
Well, there's two things here. Number one, from the player perspective, I don't know why Henry would want to be back specifically with this roster because he wants to win a Super Bowl. He said that. I'm putting myself in his mindset there. That's number one. Number two, Callahan was asked to describe his offense and what he wants to see from his offense with the Tennessee Titans. And this is how he started his answer. We want to be great in detail in the passing game, route definition, route spacing, want to be able to complete balls at a high percentage. That's always going to be the goal. Then he gets into the run game. This is a totally different Tennessee Titans organization just by that sentence and the way he answered that question. He gets into, oh, believe me, we want to be physical up front. We're not saying we don't want to run the game, abandon the run game. But he starts by saying we will be great at detail in the passing game. This is something we've never seen since the Titans moved here. I don't know of any answer that's been close to that. And because of that, that's the opposite of what Derrick Henry brought to the team. Again, it's just perception of who they want to be and how they want to be defined. That's exactly what he just said, and I don't think Henry fits that mold. I think they need another version of Spears, and I'm basing that off of what we see in San Francisco and what we see in their backfield.
Jonathan Hutton, appreciate you for stopping by. We'll be listening to you and Withrow on Hot Mic.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it. We have the Attorney General coming on later today as well, so we'll be speaking a lot on the lawsuit and the response from the state of Tennessee to the NCAA.
Juicy stuff there, Hutt. We'll be listening. Looking forward to it.
Yep, thank you, guys.
All right, appreciate it, Hutton. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with a Hutton and Withrow. Appreciate him, as always, joining us at noon on a Wednesday. Coming up next, I want to get into one thing that we touched on with Hutton, the Titans' defensive coordinator search. There's only one name that has come up so far. Is that strange? What do we think about that name, and what do we think needs – what is the future – Titans defensive coordinator, what kind of resume do they need to have, in our opinion? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.